joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. European economic leaders are working out a plan to tackle Greece's debt crisis before it spreads further. This week, both Portugal and Spain had their credit downgraded. The crisis also affected world markets, causing the Dow and Asian markets to tumble over news of Portugal's rating and the lowering of Greece's credit to junk status. Joining us in the studio, Simon Johnson of the Peterson Institute for International Economics and Eshwar Prasad at the Brookings Institution. We are expecting Uri Dadush of Carnegie's International Economics Program. As we talk about the troubles in Greece, which could be spreading to the rest of Europe, we welcome your calls, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook or Twitter. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being with us. Simon Johnson, this crisis in Greece seems to not only be going on longer than perhaps was anticipated, but now is having ripples outward. Tell us the latest.
Well, the latest, Diane, is contagion through the Eurozone. As you said, Portugal and Spain and a little bit Ireland are also considered to be in the line of fire. And people begin to mention Italy, although I think that's still the elephant in the room that people aren't really focusing on. It's a very serious problem in Europe. I don't see contagion around the world more broadly. And if anything, this pulls more money towards the United States, because where else are you going to put it at this stage? But there's no question that for the global economy, this is not helpful. It will slow down growth and it will hurt our recovery.
How do you see it, Pesha?
It is going to have implications around the world. As Simon pointed out, there are implications for the other countries in the European Union. But more importantly, there is a question about the sustainability about the Euro area project itself, because it does bring into question whether these peripheral countries, such as Greece and some of the others that Simon mentioned, that don't have very good macro policies, can actually stay in the Euro area, and whether the Euro area can sustain itself. It's also brought into question this overall issue about sovereign debt and whether many of these countries, the small advanced economies, are going to be able to pay off their debts. And this is going to lead to a strengthening of the U.S. dollar as money flows into the U.S. in the short run. But I think there is a difference that international investors are perceiving between these small advanced economies and the strongly growing emerging markets. There is still a great deal of faith that the big emerging markets like China and India are going to continue doing well. So there is going to be this bifurcation between these two groups of economies.
Bifurcation, Simon?
Well, it's a split into three pieces, I would argue. I completely agree with Eshwar that the emerging markets are seen as being relatively dynamic and relatively immune, both from the financial sector problems, which we still have in this country, and from the fiscal government problems, which you're seeing very clearly manifest in Europe. So emerging markets strong, Europe very bad shape, really struggling. America, the U.S., is the third category for me. I think our recovery is going to continue, but I think we haven't fixed our financial system. We have a lot of fiscal issues looming, and how we play a role in the global flow of capital as it runs through our banks that are, as you know, too big to fail in the eyes of many people. This is going to be a critical component of our vulnerability going forward.
Simon Johnson, he's senior fellow at the Peterson Institute, co-author of 13 Bankers, The Wall Street Takeover, and The Next Financial Meltdown. Eshwar Prasad, he's senior fellow at the Global Economy and Development Program at the Brookings Institution. And we are expecting a third guest. We look forward to hearing your questions, comments, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Eshwar Prasad, how soon do you expect agreement on the bailout for Greece, and what will it look like?
There is a pressing need to have a bailout soon, because if we don't see the situation stabilizing soon, this contagion problem that Simon referred to earlier could start spreading very quickly, not just within Europe, but possibly to other countries as well that have high levels of debt. The big difficulty is seeing a clear path for Greece to be able to undertake the reforms that it needs to undertake while it remains in the euro area.
Such as?
It needs to reform its product markets and labor markets especially. The size of its government is very large, and its revenues are simply not enough to keep up with its expenditures. It's going to be difficult to either cut expenditures or increase revenues through greater taxation at a time when the economy is not doing well.
Help me to understand Greece's economy and how it got into this problem.
The virtue of being in the euro area is that Greece was able to run relatively profligate fiscal policies without paying a higher cost. Typically, what happens is if an economy is running large fiscal deficits, it ends up having to pay higher and higher borrowing costs as it issues public debt. And this imposes discipline. On the other hand, Greece was in the euro area, so there was a sense that the rest of Europe would not let Greece go down the tubes, that discipline would be imposed. The additional issue is that Greece was fudging its numbers. This is not just true of Greece, but it turns out many countries in the euro area have been fudging their numbers. Essentially, because the European Union and the euro area was predicated on the assumption that countries in that zone would keep their deficits under 3% of GDP and debt levels under 60% of GDP. We are finding out now that, in fact, that discipline did not work very well. So essentially, Greece was given a free pass because it was in the euro area, and these problems have festered for a while, and now they're coming to a head.
And now, Simon Johnson, we hear that Germany may be the key here. Is that so?
Absolutely, Diane. If you want to do a bailout within Europe, within the eurozone, and you know, if you don't want to bring it to the G20 level, for example, which is actually where I think it's going, but if you just want to stay within Europe, it's largely about the Germans and what the Germans are willing to pay for on what terms. And as Ishwar said, there are these deep problems in Greece that the Germans see very clearly, and the Germans are saying, look, we already basically helped you out for 10 years. You didn't do any of the stuff you needed to do. Now, why should we put more cash in if you're just going to blow it on public sector wages?
So how do you answer that question?
So this is why the IMF has been brought in. Now, the IMF is not everyone's most popular set of people. Ishwar and I both used to work at the IMF. I think we hold it in high regard, but lots of other people see it as very controversial. The reason, though, and the Europeans turned to the IMF, by the way, far too late and with too much reluctance, but they brought them in because the Europeans couldn't figure this out for themselves. They couldn't agree on exactly what are the conditions that go with the money. No one's going to give Greece a loan with no conditions under these circumstances, not after they've mismanaged their way in large part into this crisis. So, but what are the conditions? What is fair and reasonable and acceptable on all sides? That is what the IMF is currently trying to work out.
And so far, we're hearing that the cost of bailing out Greece could come to as much as, what, 120 billion euros? $160 million.
Billion dollars.
Billion.
Yes, that's a lot of money. And by the way, that's a big shift in expectations and in the discussion, because until a week or two ago, people were saying, is it 10 or 20 billion
right.
Euros? And we've been arguing very strongly that it's a lot more than that. Now, that amount of money, the amount, let's say $150, $160 billion, the IMF could afford. But if you're going to add Portugal and Spain onto some sort of program, which I would say should be preemptive, they would not necessarily have to be very tough, austere programs if you come in early. But if you add up that money based on the scale of what you need for Greece, extend that to these other countries, we're talking about $1 trillion, Diane.
You had some pushback from something you wrote regarding Portugal in a blog you did.
That's right. We posted some material on our blog, Baseline Scenario, where we went through the numbers for Portugal about 10 days ago, perhaps almost 2 weeks ago. And we write very much from a sort of an economics perspective. We're just doing the numbers. There was nothing pejorative, I can assure you, in this posting. And it's quite extraordinary. Both the president of Portugal and the finance minister blasted us in public on the record, saying that we were completely out in left field and didn't know what we were talking about and so on and so forth. And I just thought it was extraordinary that they would even mention our names on the record. And secondly, that they would so clearly demonstrate this denial, which now obviously has caught up with them. I can assure you we are not responsible for the fiscal problems or the bond market revaluation of Portugal.
This is a scary prospect overall, because the initial assumption was that the IMF would come in, give some money to Greece, and that Greece would do what was needed to stabilize itself, and then private markets would start getting confidence in Greece. But it's becoming increasingly clear that international investors have absolutely no confidence that Greece, even if it does get conditions from the IMF, will actually be able to summon up the political will to do what needs to be done. Already the notion of any cuts in public expenditure have people out on the streets in Athens and in the rest of Greece. So if that doesn't happen, the reality is that the IMF and the European Union are going to have to essentially bail out Greece, not just this year, but for the next couple of years as well. And this is why the amounts have been rising.
I see.
Or maybe there's no bailout in the sense that all the creditors are rescued, Diane. I think increasingly people are discussing scenarios in which Greece defaults or doesn't pay some of its debt.
What happens in that case if Greece were to default?
Well, honestly, Diane, it's not the end of the world. It's so emerging markets, weaker emerging markets, do this routinely. The problem is for a European country to do it and a member of the Eurozone to do it. That's a huge change in everyone's thinking about the nature of risks and how the world has been run. So people are not yet ready for that. And it would be a big hit to the European banks. Wouldn't you know it, the German banks and the French banks are in over their heads on Greek junk debt. So they're going to need a bailout. It keeps going on.
What if the Greeks went back to the drachma, moved out of the euro?
It would make things a little easier for them in terms of their exports becoming more competitive. And this has been the real problem for Greece. Being in the euro area with countries like Germany that have had tremendous increases in productivity because they've undertaken a lot of reforms. So in Greece, you're going to have to undertake these reforms without the ease of weaker currencies. It's going to make things a lot harder if they stay in the euro.
Ishwar Prasad, Senior Fellow at the Global Economy and Development Program at Brookings. And welcome back. We're talking about the Greek financial crisis, whether in fact it is spreading to other parts of Europe. Here in the studio, Simon Johnson. He's at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Ishwar Prasad, he's Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution. And joining us now is Uri Dadush, Senior Associate Director in Carnegie's International Economics Program. He's former Director of International Trade, former Director of Economic Policy at the World Bank. We will open the phone shortly. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Just before the break, we were talking about the drachma and whether, in fact, Greece might pull out of the euro and revert to the drachma. Simon, you wanted to respond.
Yes, I think that's actually fairly unlikely at this point. Obviously, Ishwar's right. It would help them on the export side, but the disruption that that would introduce into the bond markets would be enormous, and the interest rate they would have to pay would be mind-boggling. And then, most importantly, their European partners really don't want to do this. The eurozone was not set up for countries to be able to leave. There's no mechanism. It would be a huge disruption, and of course, it would then people would then say, okay, who's next?
What kinds of changes does Greece have to concede to before the IMF, Germany, everybody steps up to the plate? Uri Dedush, welcome, and what is your view?
Thank you. There are really two main elements. One is there has to be a very large cut in the fiscal deficit of Spain, of Greece, over a period of the 3 years of the standard program, designed to stabilize their debt-to-GDP ratio. Now, even in the best circumstances, that debt-to-GDP ratio will go up to about 150% from 125% now. This will still require an enormous fiscal adjustment, a kind of stimulus in reverse, which will depress GDP. The other big element is to regain competitiveness vis-a-vis Germany and its international trading partners. And that is essentially trying to have a devaluation without being able to change the currency. It means cutting wages, and it means cutting the price of non-tradable products relative to exports and imports.
It's not just wages, though, is it? Isn't it also early retirement, the pensions being paid out, the number of people who are not paying taxes in that country? I mean, it sounds like an absolutely fully systemic problem.
It is a systemic problem, and it's one that, as Eshwar was saying earlier, has actually built up over many, many years. So they now have to kind of do in reverse what has happened since the euro's inception, where they have been able to grow government spending and raise wages because of this massive infusion of confidence and cut in interest rates that the euro induced.
Now, Simon, when we had a program on Greece in particular earlier this month, a representative said it was the prior Greek government that got Greece into this situation. The current Greek government is trying its best to reverse the conditions. Would you agree?
Yes, I think there's a fair amount of truth to that, and I think we should try and support this government, which is owning up to some of these past mistakes. And I would actually pick up, Diane, on this word concede that you used a moment ago. It's not that, you know, countries in the outside world are beating Greece with a stick, forcing them to do things. It is that Greece has brought itself to the verge of disaster. Previous governments, no doubt, were responsible. And they now have to be rescued, helped out. But in order to do that, they have to do some things for themselves that are difficult and painful. And people don't believe, private markets don't believe, the Germans don't believe, that they're going to be able to do it because the trade unions don't want to do it, because the people are in the streets actually trying to block the Ministry of Finance, even, according to some reports.
Now, Eshwar, we've heard that May 19th has been mentioned as a crucial date to conclude aid for Greece. Tell me what is supposed to happen on May 19th or by May 19th?
The amount of debt that Greece has accumulated over time will come up for refinancing at different points. And what happens on May 19th is that there is a payment of $11.3 billion that the Greeks have to make. If they miss that payment, that effectively becomes a default by Greece, and it could trigger much greater ramifications for how much it has to pay for any additional financing. It could get locked out of capital markets, and then the contagion effects could be much sharper. So that effectively gives us a very clear date by which a program has to be concluded and Greece has to receive funds if things are not going to blow apart. And this creates a sense of urgency, because essentially we can see that if we don't achieve a set of agreements between the IMF and the European Union and Greece by then things are going to get really bad.
And Uri Dedush, where is the United States government in all this? Is the government standing back, waiting, watching, or participating behind the scenes?
Well, I have no doubt that the U.S. government, the major economic decision makers, are very concerned about the situation in Greece.
Concerned is one thing, participating is another.
Well, and I think that there influence has to be behind the scenes. This is a very sensitive matter for its European allies. But unequivocally, the United States has a vital interest in this outcome. The dollar is appreciating relative to the euros at the time that the president wants to double exports. Over 5 years, the global economy is still fragile. The European economy could be in for a long extended period of very slow growth. The international banking system could be affected if the contagion beyond Greece goes very widely, such as starts hitting Spain and Italy. So there are very vital U.S. interests at stake here, but the United States has to play a role behind the scenes, and of course, in its position as the leading shareholder in the International Monetary Fund.
All right, two questions, Simon. Uri mentioned that the dollar is appreciating. How is that affecting imports, exports? Second, what kind of role do you see the U.S. government playing behind the scenes?
Well, let me start with the U.S. government role first. They've been deeply asleep, Diane. Both the White House and the Treasury, I can assure you, were not paying attention to this. They thought it was small. They thought it was just Greece. They thought the Eurozone would be able to handle it. They were completely wrong. They're now trying to play catch-up. And as Yuri said, it is difficult because the Europeans are incredibly sensitive. And the IMF is seen as an instrument of American power, even though, by the way, the Europeans are massively overrepresented on the board of the IMF and have disproportionate sway over that institution. But that's not how it's seen. So the U.S. government is in a very difficult place, and they are far behind the curve on this one. Now, as for the dollar, this is a key issue. We haven't yet seen a big movement. I think the euro could move a lot more. Currency markets are very hard to predict, one of the hardest economic variables to forecast. But if you think about our discussion here, and you think about where else in the world do people feel they should put their safe money, if there is more general concern about risk and about government debt, they're going to be coming into the dollar. And this for sure is going to make it harder for us to at least partly export our way out of the recession.
This is not good for anybody. And I think there is a common collective interest around the world in making sure that we get out of this problem without creating too much of a mess. The issue, again, is still whether Greece can do what it needs to do. Everybody is going to try to help Greece. And I think the instrument of the International Monetary Fund is what makes the most sense, because it is a somewhat neutral perspective in all of this. And it's going to be very difficult for the Europeans to keep this within the family and try to manage this problem, because it's just a very dysfunctional family. But when it comes to the U.S., again, the direct impact is somewhat neutral, because if, because of the safe haven effect that Simon talked about, everybody gets concerned about international markets, they put money in the U.S., in the short run, it's not necessarily a bad thing for the U.S. We have a very large deficit problem on our hands. It allows us to finance a deficit somewhat more cheaply for a slightly longer period, perhaps get into even more trouble. On the other hand, the rising exports, the rising dollar is going to affect our exports. So the U.S. is on the cusp. But again, even the U.S. is not going to be well served if we don't get financial stability restored soon.
The IMF and European Commission are not making statements while negotiations are going on. Are they worried about financial markets around the world, Simon?
Absolutely, of course, and they should be. And by the way, the U.S. Treasury needs to start becoming more careful about what it says and doesn't say to the markets. They had a very bad weekend in this regard. But just to pick up on one point Ishwar said, the IMF should be neutral, needs to be seen as neutral, but there's a big problem right now, which is that Dominic Strauss-Kahn, who's the managing director of the IMF, the top person, is widely understood to be running for the presidency of France. In fact, he's the front runner in many polls. So you have a leading French presidential candidate, head of the IMF, with the IMF trying to balance these various interests. And of course, President Sarkozy's people are not terribly excited that Mr. Strauss-Kahn could use this as a vehicle to really launch his presidential campaign formally. It gets very complicated as long as Mr. Strauss-Kahn stays in that job.
Before we open the phones, tell me about the impact of the downgrading of ratings for both Greece and Portugal. Uri.
Well, I mean, in a sense, this is another case where the rating agencies react, after the fact. I mean, both Greece and Portugal, and by the way, yesterday Spain was downgraded,
and maybe Italy coming along
as well.
Somewhere.
And, as well. So this is, I think, frankly, because the rating agencies tend to lag the markets, the impact is, there is an announcement effect impact, which you saw yesterday in the markets, but it is, you know, I would say a secondary consideration. The primary consideration is the underlying trends and fundamentals.
Exactly.
In these economies.
And do these lowering of ratings indicate to the world that it's not just Greece in trouble, it's these other countries as well? While you may fix Greece, you may have to worry about the others as you go along, Ishwar.
So the rating agencies, as Uri said, are reacting, but they serve as a very important trigger for market nervousness. Markets are very concerned about what they're seeing as the numbers. And when Standard & Poor's or Moody's comes out with a negative rating, that immediately triggers market expectations which coalesce around it. And once this happens to Greece, then it's natural that investors start looking at other countries as well. Now, Greece has fudged its books, and that's becoming increasingly apparent. We still don't know
the help of...
Essentially, they were trying to meet the European Union guidelines, and the European Union gave them a free pass. It didn't monitor their accounts as carefully as they should have. So there are natural questions arising. Are other countries in the Eurozone also fudging their books in order to meet the criteria that they set out for themselves?
And how much faith do we have these days in Standard & Poor's and Moody's, Simon?
Very little, Diane. But as Ishwar said, it's a point around which expectations coalesce. And of course... another answer to your question about who helped the Greeks get here is Goldman Sachs, because they were very much involved, and they're not the only bank, presumably, but they're the one we know about that was very much involved in disguising Greek debt levels, in helping to then sell more Greek debt to other people without revealing the true level of Greek debt. If it starts to seem like we have a pattern of behavior here, Diane, it's because we do.
Simon Johnson, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We'll open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First, we'll take a call in St. Louis, Missouri. Good morning, Frank. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. My quick question, are your guests predicting that we're going to see a euro for less than a dollar within the next year or two? And the second part of the question, do you think that the Eurozone countries will go back to their own currency, French franc and British pound and mark?
Interesting questions, Ishwar.
Good economists never predict exactly where exchange rates are going to go because we have no idea. In principle, that information should already be in current exchange rates. The irony here is that money is flowing into the U.S., strengthening the U.S. dollar at a time, and the U.S. dollar ought to be weakening because the U.S. economy is not doing that great, and we are building up enormous amounts of deficits and debt here. So how the balance will work out between these two is very hard to tell. And as for the euro area, I don't see it coming apart because of this. There is too much at stake in the euro area, and as Simon pointed out, there isn't an easy mechanism for dissolving the euro area.
All right, let's go to Dallas, Texas. Saad, you're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. My question was... First of all, what's the relationship between debt and GDP? Because it seems like Ireland is about 1,512% of their GDP in debt, and so is Britain, and so European countries and the United States. So the relationship is, how is it compared to the GDP? Because if they could borrow more than what they make a year, how could they manage it to tax the people on? I don't understand the relationship between
all right, Simon.
So that's a great question, and the basic answer is that once your debt to GDP gets up around 90% or 100%, so the amount of debt outstanding is close to what you produce in a year, then you know a lot of red lights start to go off. Now you can go higher, and Greece could actually go up to 150%, 1.5 times its GDP with its debt. But that would absolutely be beyond what you were comfortable with, and you'd want them to bring that back down pretty soon. The U.S., by the way, Diane, to put this in perspective, as a result of our financial crisis, as a result of what the bankers did and got away with, we moved our debt. This is privately held U.S. government debt, federal government debt. It was about 40% of GDP when we started the crisis. And it's going to rise to around 80%. So we, if you like, became rather Greek as a result of our financial misbehavior.
Is Greece able to make the kinds of changes necessary to stabilize its economy, or has it locked itself into a place where it's almost nearly impossible to get out in the way the IMF, the World Bank, and the other economies around the world are demanding, Uri?
Well, unfortunately, Diane, my view is that it is going to be very, very difficult for the Greeks to dig themselves out of this situation while maintaining their projected debt payments. So I think the, you know, other countries like Latvia, for example, are engineering an adjustment of the size that is required of Greece. But every country needs to be looked at differently in terms of its political situation and capacity to deal with the problem. So I don't think they can do it by themselves.
Uri Dadoush, he is at the Carnegie International Economics Program. Short break. When we come back, more of your calls, your comments. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. By the Annie E. Casey Foundation, working to help families earn it, keep it, save it during Financial Literacy Month on the web at aecf.org. And by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, providing schools that work, strategies for 21st century success. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
American politician, pastor, and civil rights leader Andrew Young on faith, love, and leadership lessons for the next generation and the future of race relations. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And here's an email from Mark in Bethel, Ohio, as we talk about the Greek debt crisis, which is slowly, apparently spreading to other parts of Europe. Is not the dynamics of the German reaction to the Greek debt situation the same as the U.S. debate on the Wall Street bailouts? Much of the public, the Tea Party, the GOP, decry the bailouts and exclaim, let them fail. But supporters warn this would have led to a massive collapse of the American economy, turning a severe recession, mild depression, into another Great Depression. Do you see the same thing going on here in the United States, Simon?
I think there's a great deal of parallels, Diane. I wouldn't make exactly that split. I would say that the Greeks want to be bailed out unconditionally, just like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase and Citigroup were bailed out. But they won't get it, I don't think. I think that funnily enough, the big banks in our country became more important politically, more powerful than even the Greeks or the Portuguese or the Spanish within the Eurozone. I think there's going to be debt restructuring. I think that there will be some hopefully well-managed default on the debt of certainly of Greece and maybe of some of these other countries. That, Diane, by the way, could be a salutary lesson for capital markets around the world, because it's the problem is creditors believing that either our biggest banks are too big to fail or particular countries are too big to fail. That's what leads you into a lot of overborrowing.
And here's a message posted on Facebook from Jacqueline. She says, now the IMF and super wealthy in general will dictate to a European country the same types of drastic cuts to social programs, such as education, healthcare, etc., that it has to African countries. The only institutions that can't be cut back, according to them, are too big to fail banks in order to maintain the obscene wealth for the few. Eshwar.
That sentiment is understandable, and the notion that many people are making money off this difficulty of Greece and others is, again, something that certainly rankles. But in this particular case, the reality is that Greece is going to have to deal with this. The problem is that it's not easy to see a way out. This is not an economy that is used to paying taxes. So if you try to raise taxes, even more people are going to evade taxes. So the tax revenues are going to be very difficult to raise, especially when the economy is not doing well.
What is the percent of the Greek population that pays taxes?
I don't have a number on that, but if you look at the overall Greek expenditure ratio, it's about 50% of GDP, so it's a very large public sector, and it looks like the amount of revenues that they're taking in are, based on the deficit, at least 12 to 13 percentage points less than that. So they're not able to collect taxes very efficiently. So the onus is going to have to fall on the expenditure side, and the pain is going to be very sharp, because if you have such a large public sector, and there is a sense of entitlement that is built up with generous pensions, early retirement ages, and so on, it's very difficult to pull all that back. And again, the notion that this has to be done at a time when other people are making money off this makes things somewhat harder politically.
So it's not just at the upper levels of government, it's down at the municipalities. It's going to affect schools, it's going to affect mail service, everything.
Yes, the reality is that the cuts are going to have to be so sharp and so deep if Greece can get this together that it is going to hurt everybody.
I think that the question is framed in an entirely fair and reasonable manner. People, some of these, she calls them super wealthy. I might call them bankers, the banking elite. They made a lot of money when Greece was booming. And I bet you anything, Diane, that both the German bankers and the French bankers are in over their heads. And by the way, any American bankers who may have big exposure to European bank risk through their derivative positions, and nobody can tell you that because the derivatives are so scary and so complicated, all of these people will walk away from this intact, just like they did in this country 2008, 2009. So I think this sentiment is exactly on target and needs to be addressed.
To Carlos here in Washington, D.C., good morning. You're on the air. Carlos, are you there? All right.
Yes.
Let's go to Julius in Greenville, North Carolina. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go right ahead, sir.
All right. My question, I was very concerned about the American deficit, and I'm always reminded that I have to look at it as compared to our GDP. And I'm curious how the Greek debt compares to their GDP and the current deficits they're running, and will it affect world credit ratings for the people who borrow notoriously against their GDP for nations like Japan?
Eshwar.
There is a deep irony that the caller's question brings up. It used to be the case that we used to be very concerned about the high levels of debt and deficits in emerging markets. And now things have shifted around completely, that the emerging markets, or most of them at least, have their finances well under control. And it's the advanced economies that are running up massive amounts of debt. So yes, the caller is right that you do have to measure debt relative to GDP. The U.S. looks a little less scary by comparison. But if you think about the absolute amount, and in the best case scenario, it's likely that net debt debt in the U.S. will land up at around 70% of GDP. That's about $10 to $11 trillion. That's going to soak up a lot of savings from the U.S. and the rest of the world. And if you start adding up these numbers across the advanced economies, all of which are running larger and larger deficits in order to get out of the recession, the overall number is going to look pretty scary and could affect financial stability for a while to come.
And here's an email from Nisha who says, when will Ireland's debt be downgraded as Portugal's and Spain's has? I always understood Greece to be the weakest point of the Eurozone, but did not realize Ireland had such a larger leg up on the other members of that group called PIGS. You might respond, Uri.
Yes, Diane. Well, Ireland is also in a very serious situation, but not so much because its public sector is out of control. They have actually already engineered some very large wage cuts in Ireland and are doing a very significant fiscal adjustment operation this year already. But Ireland's problem is that they have guaranteed and taken on a huge number of liabilities from their failed banks, which are gigantic relative to Ireland's GDP. So that is the scariest situation with regard to Ireland.
You know, it's extraordinary. I was in Ireland about 6 years ago when everything was booming. The landholders, the restaurants were filled, the hotels were booming. What happened, Simon?
They went on a crazy credit boom, Diane. The banks expanded massively. This was facilitated by the belonging to the Eurozone, much easier access to financing for the government and particularly for the private sector. And this, they got massively carried away. But there was also a web of interest there, Diane, between the bankers, the real estate developers and the politicians that led them to greatly expand their banks. Their banks, Dan, have gone beyond being so-called too big to fail. They're too big to save, or at least when you save them, which is what they've done, the fiscal costs are enormous. Yeah. And then you have to cut wages and social services. So this goes back to the question of how do the super wealthy come out of this? Well, they did great on the boom and just fine in the bust. And regular people are getting hammered again and again.
All right. To Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Good morning, Ray. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have two questions. The first is, what types of safeguards, if any, is the EU looking at for other countries like Ireland or Spain or Portugal, or I heard you mention Italy, who seem to be moving in the same direction as Greece? And my second kind of question is, what specific types of conditions would the EU or IMF try to impose on Greece in order to give them the bailout that they want? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Right. Thank you, Eshwar.
In terms of safeguards for the other countries, right now the key issue is just to get the Greek program on the ground, because if not, all the other countries are going to come under severe pressure. In fact, the borrowing rates for countries like Portugal and Spain have already jumped in the last couple of weeks. So there isn't a safety net being created as of now. And as Simon pointed out, rescuing countries like Spain, Portugal, or possibly even Italy is going to involve a much greater cost. Now, the IMF essentially is going to come in and tell Greece that it has to cut its fiscal deficit. It used to be the case that the IMF would not only tell countries how to cut their deficit, but how much to cut their deficit, but how to do it. In this case, I think it'll be very difficult for the IMF to lay out precise measures, because these are going to be very painful and having them imposed from the outside is going to be difficult. So what the IMF will essentially lay out is a set of targets that Greece will have to meet in terms of its deficit reduction over the next 3 years, and leave it to some extent to Greece to decide how to achieve that.
But Uri, is Greece able to make the kinds of moves that are going to stabilize its economy?
Well, again, we will see. But my suspicion is that it is going to be very, very, very difficult, almost impossible for them to execute the kind of program that is needed to stabilize the markets. And so inevitably, some kind of rescheduling or restructuring of the debt has to happen. And I think the big question about the rescheduling and the restructuring of the debt is, when do you want it to happen? Do you want it to happen now when there's a big crisis on and, you know, banks are extremely fragile? Or is it better if we wait a year or two until the world economy has recovered and meanwhile we provide some support to Greece? And the other is, as Simon was saying, is how elegant is this restructuring? Is it a very messy thing done on a weekend in the middle of the night under tremendous financial market pressure, or is it a negotiated and agreed upon? And it'll never be easy, but yeah.
Simon, I don't understand what it means to reschedule the debt. Explain.
Well, that's when you call up your credit card company and say, I can't make my monthly payments. How about we push it back a little bit? And they say, okay, but maybe we'll jack up your interest rate. And that's the negotiation which you have with your credit card company. It's a question of your bargaining power, what kind of deal you get. But I would like to add, Diane, this is not about Greece anymore. It's not even about Portugal or Ireland or Spain. This is about a fundamental break in the Eurozone, and this cannot be handled, I fear, increasingly by the IMF acting alone. It has to go to the level of the G20. And while we use these numbers that, you know, you need $1 trillion, for example, to stabilize the situation, that seems like a lot. It is less than half of what China has in its foreign exchange reserves.
So you're saying all the countries of the G20 have to be involved.
Yes, absolutely. Look, it's a question of governance, it's a question of legitimacy, Diane. And I think that the questions are bringing this out. When people say, what is the IMF imposing on Greece? I honestly don't think it's an imposition. I think it's a terrible situation. The Greek people are going to get really badly hurt whichever way this comes out. You want to help them as much as possible, and they have to help themselves. The IMF can't do that by itself. The G20 has to come in, and the U.S. has to show some leadership.
Simon Johnson, he is at MIT Sloan School of Management. Let's go back to the phones to Deepak in Alexandria, Virginia. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. My question is on the impact of the Greek financial crisis and potential crisis in the Eurozone on the U.S. inflation and interest rates. My understanding is that the dollar is a safe haven for now for most of the countries parking their money in the U.S., and also the federal funds rate is at record lows. So I am concerned about inflation and potentially higher inflation down the road.
All right, Eshwar.
In the short run, it's not necessarily a bad thing for the U.S. As we discussed earlier, as money comes into the U.S., it makes it easier for us to finance our deficit at lower interest rates. It's going to make imports cheaper. But, of course, the downside of that is that we can't count on exports to create jobs. And it's going to put a problem on President Obama's plan to use exports and double exports over the next 5 years. In the long run, it could create problems if we do use this rope that's given to us to extend the amount of debt we have, and if we don't create jobs here, that is ultimately not going to be good for the U.S. or for the rest of the world economy.
So you do believe that what's happening in Greece, Portugal, Spain, Ireland could have a direct impact on the United States?
The net effect is hard to tell, because on the one hand, it'll drive up the exchange rate, which has a couple of different effects. On the other hand, it'll keep borrowing costs low, so our mortgages, car loans, and so on are going to be cheaper, so it'll help the U.S. economy at one level. So the net effect in the short run is going to be hard to tell. But again, this international financial stability is not good for the U.S. as well, because it means that the rest of the world, in particular Europe, which is one of the largest economic areas, is going to be very weak.
Yeah, just briefly, don't forget the effect on banks, okay? I mean, if this thing spreads beyond Greece, U.S. banks have very little exposure to Greece. But the more the net widens, the greater the direct exposure of U.S. banks. I think to the vulnerable countries, U.S. banks have $176 billion exposure, which is not gigantic. It's only about 5%. Of their global exposure, but nevertheless is there. But then there are all the indirect effect linkages between U.S. banks and European banks. So this is the central reason why the contagion effects within Europe have to be contained.
Here's an email from Connie in Cleveland. How much does Greece rely on tourism? How will this affect tourism to Greece this summer? I would not go because of potential countrywide strikes. What do you think, Uri?
Well, tourism is very important to Greece. Actually, Greece's exports are one-third tourism, one-third shipping. and one's heard other things. My suspicion is that the main tourists in Greece are European tourists. They know the country very well. My expectation is that this will have actually very little effect. If anything, what I would expect is the overall atmosphere of crisis, etc., will lead them to reduce their prices. This is one of the areas where they can gain market share as a result of the adjustment, and that there will be increased tourism to Spain this
year.
Well, I think it depends on the strikes. I mean, do you want to go to a country where you may not be able to move around, where there could be a lot of disruption? And just to go back to the banking point, Dan, which is very important, no one can tell you what is the derivative exposure of U.S. banks to European banks. That number doesn't exist in the public domain. I don't believe any regulator knows because of the way derivatives have become so complex and so murky.
Simon Johnson of MIT, he's the author of 13 Bankers, The Wall Street Takeover, The Next Financial Meltdown. Uri Dadoosh, he's at the Carnegie International Economics Program. And Eshwar Prasad, he's senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, also professor of trade policy at Cornell University. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones.